All right, well, welcome to another session with Zion's Trumpet, Brother Daniel. How's everybody doing out there in Pal Talk land? Everybody doing good this week? Good. Joshua's doing good. Did you ever get your mic working there, Joshua? Joshua emailed me and said he got a mic. He was going to try and use it. Did you ever get your mic working, Joshua? Haven't tried it yet. Okay. Well, all right. Anybody got anything to share before we start off tonight? Anything on your heart? No? Sissy says, please keep her in prayer. Must be having a problem, Sissy. Okay, Sissy, she's battling some spiritual things, so I'll have to keep her in prayer so she gets victory, stays on top. I guess we'll just start out tonight. I'm going to conclude this thing on Israel. And we're going to talk a little bit about what's happening in Israel tonight politically first. And then we'll look at what's ahead, I believe, according to Scripture. Okay? The political situation in Israel often seems complex. But once you have a grasp on the overall situation regarding the positions and the goals of the Jews over there and the position and the goals of the Arabs, the rest of what goes on is not that hard to understand. It's like watching a chess game. Okay, the goal in a chess game is to checkmate the opponent, and there's many different strategies that chess players use to do that. Also, it takes many individual different kinds of moves to execute those strategies, okay? You may not understand the strategy of what these guys are doing when they're playing a game, but in the end, you know what the goal is. The goal is always the same. It's to checkmate the other guy. And that's the way it is regarding the Israeli-Arab conflict or the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. Details change, faces change, strategies change, individual moves change. But the goals of the Jews and the goals of the Arabs remain the same. Okay? The goals of the Arabs is very simple. It's the destruction of the Jewish state and the return of every inch of Israel to the rule and the authority of Islam. The size of Israel is immaterial to the Arabs. The location of the borders of Israel is immaterial. The root cause of this whole matter is the fact the very existence of a Jewish state that is an affront to Allah and a daily humiliation to the religion of Islam. That's the problem. The size of Israel, the borders of Israel, how many Jews live in Israel, what kind of state Israel is not at all the issue. The issue is there is an infidel state, a sovereign, powerful, infidel state, right in the middle of Allah's territory. It's an affront to Allah. It's a daily humiliation to the religion of Islam. Until a person understands that simple fact, they will never be able to grasp the strategies or the moves of the Arabs outside of Israel or the Palestinians inside of Israel. Now, in January of 1994, after the signing of the September 1993 agreements between Israel and the PLO in Oslo, a Hamas leader was interviewed by the BBC. And of course, the BBC is very friendly to Hamas and the Arabs, so this correspondent asked this Hamas leader how he felt about the new situation with his peace agreement in Oslo, that is, how he felt about the prospective peace that might be coming between the Israelis and the Palestinians through this. And this guy's reply was very honest and insightful. This is what he said. He said, "You don't understand. Islam can never negotiate with or recognize Israel." He didn't say the Arabs in the Middle East can never recognize Israel. He didn't say the Palestinians can never recognize Israel. He didn't say Hamas or Hezbollah, or the PLO, or any other dozens of terrorist group over there can ever recognize Israel. What he said was Islam. Islam can never recognize Israel. Islam, the religion of Islam, will never accept a sovereign Jewish state in the heart of the Muslim Arab world, regardless of its size, regardless of its borders. And those who refuse to understand or accept this basic fact are doomed to be deceived over and over again by the strategies and the political moves of the Arabs and the Palestinians. No faithful Muslim can accept Israel on a permanent basis, ever. For this reason, the Jewish victory in 1948, when the Jews had a state of their own, that became the day of greatest shame in the modern history of the Arab world. The creation of a sovereign, infidel, powerful state in the middle of Islamic territory is the ultimate challenge to the Islamic world and to Islamic theology. On that day, the face of both the Arab nation and its God, its demon God, Allah, was blackened. It was blackened by the creation of Israel. Every day that the Jewish state of Israel survives is a testimony that Jehovah is greater than Allah. And all those millions of Arabs, with the whole world on their side, can't defeat the Jews. That's a daily humiliation to Allah, to Islam, and to every Muslim in the Arab world. And once you understand this basic reality, the statements that have been made over the years by Arab leaders will begin to make much more sense to you, okay? I'm going to read you some statements from the 60s and 70s and 80s, just so you know, can see what I'm saying is true. It's the religion of Islam that cannot and will never tolerate Israel. November 26, 1955, Arab leader named Al-Amram says, quote, "Our war against the Jews is an old struggle that began with Muhammad. It is our duty to fight the Jews for the sake of Allah and religion. And it is our duty to end the war that Muhammad began." Okay. Anwar Sadat, the guy who made peace with Israel. Remember the guy who made peace with Israel from Egypt? Anwar Sadat, in April 25th, 1972, he said, "I promise to crush Israel and return it to the humiliation and wretchedness established in the Quran." Yasser Arafat says, "Surely the judgment of Allah is reserved for them, that's the Jews, until Palestine is transferred from Dar al-Harb to Dar al-Islam." Dar al-Harb is the region of war. Dar al-Islam is the region of peace. The world is divided into two regions in Islam. Either you're in under Islam's rule and authority, that is Dar al-Islam, or you're in Dar al-Harb, which Islam is perpetually and eternally at war with. So he's saying until Palestine is transferred back to Dar al-Islam, there's going to be war. Imam Hussein al-Banna, who was the former head of the Egyptian Muslim Brotherhood, he said, "Israel will exist and continue to exist until Islam eliminates it, just as it eliminated what preceded." That's referring to the Crusaders. King Abdul Aziz ibn Saud, one of the first kings of Saudi Arabia, said, "We shall only accept war, jihad, the holy war. We have resolved to drench the lands of Palestine and Arabia with the blood of the infidels," that's primarily Jews, but also the Westerners, "or to accept martyrdom for the glory of Allah." King Farouk, a former president of Egypt, he says, "The Jews in Palestine must be exterminated. There can be no option for those of us who revere the name of Allah. It be jihad." King Idris, which is a former president of Libya, he said, "The Zionist conquest of Palestine is an affront to all Muslims. There can be no compromise until every Jew is dead and gone." 1991, the former president of Iran, said, "Every problem in our region can be traced to this single dilemma, the occupation of Dar al-Islam by Jewish infidels." Dr. Abdul Halim Muhammad, the Grand Sheikh, in 1973 said, "The enemies of God have committed aggression on Muslim lands and desecrated our sanctuaries. It has become the duty of every Muslim to make the sacrifice to liberate Muslim territories." Back in 1993, another senior Hamas leader named Ibrahim Gosha said, "Fighting the Jews and Israel is a religious obligation." I'm just reading these comments to let you know that regardless of what people say in the realm of politics, this whole thing has nothing to do with politics, nothing to do with borders, nothing to do with refugees, just settlements, all that garbage. Islam cannot tolerate an infidel state in the middle of its territory. Now, since the destruction of Israel and the return of the land to Allah is the goal of the Arabs and the Palestinians, everything they say and everything they do is toward the accomplishment of that goal. When they talk about wanting a Palestinian state, the purpose of that state is to eventually destroy Israel, not to live in peace with Israel. Every move they make is just a tactic to reach their goal. They do not want peace with Israel, and they have no intention of living in peace with Israel. Now, the goal of the Jews, on the other hand, is to have their own sovereign state and to live in peace with the surrounding Arabs. They want their state to be a Jewish state, just as Germany is a German state, just as France is a French state. That's not racism. That's the normal desire of every national people. The Jews are no more racist than the French are if they want a French state, the Germans are to have a German state. and the Jews are willing to compromise on many issues to gain a true peace with the Arabs in and around their country. They have returned land. They've won defensive wars to achieve peace with Egypt. All right. They have proven that they are not militaristic and imperialistic. Okay, impatience do not give huge portions of their land up for peace with their neighbors. They've already made many substantial compromises for peace, and they've got very little in return, a shallow, cold peace with Egypt and Jordan that will be broken the first time there's a war, and they've got nothing, absolutely nothing from the Palestinians. As a matter of fact, the Gaza expulsion back in 2005, which is called disengagement, when they kicked all the Jews out of Gaza, that proves beyond a shadow of doubt that the Palestinians do not want a permanent peace with Israel. Yeah, that plan was carried out in August 2005. The Israeli government first paid the Jewish residents of Gaza to leave that area and relocate somewhere else. And those who refused to locate voluntarily couldn't be bribed. By August the 15th deadline, they were evicted by the Israeli army over a period of several days. And they emptied that whole region out of every Jew. Every Jew is gone from Gaza. The eviction of all the residential buildings and the evacuation of all the security personnel from the Gaza Strip, that was completed on September 12, 2005. And Israel also dismantled four settlements in the northern West Bank 10 days later as part of that agreement. And the results of disengagement have not only been worthless as far as peace is concerned, they've been disastrous. A professor named Gerald M. Steinberg, who's the director of the Program of Conflict Management in Bar-Ilan University over in Israel, who was a very ardent supporter of the disengagement, of leaving Gaza, this is what he had to say about it after the results have become clear for all to see. He said, quote, "As an early supporter of unilateral disengagement, I admit that this plan, like the earlier Oslo peace process, has failed. Hopes that an unprecedented move, that's by Israel, that an unprecedented move, including the dismantling of all Israel military bases, checkpoints, and even houses in Gaza, would reduce the violence and promote mutual accommodation were naive. Were naive. The role of the Palestinian population in supporting terror is central, but the international community also bears considerable responsibility for this latest disaster. For years, Europeans, the UN, and others have provided mass support, financial as well as political, to PLO leader Yasser Arafat in the hopes that he would make peace. After that proved to be a mirage and Arafat died, the members of the quartet pressed numerous schemes to prop up Arafat's successors. These failed to achieve anything of significance. Without skipping a beat, as soon as the Israelis left, that is Gaza, as soon as the Israelis left Gaza, the Palestinians extended the terrorist infrastructure to encompass the resources they had gained from that. A few months later, the entry of Hamas officials pledged to radical Islam and the eradication of Israel sped up this process." Okay, so just a few months after the Israelis pulled out of the Gaza Strip so they could begin building their state, the Palestinians began firing rockets almost daily into the towns in southern Israel. And the Israeli government allowed that to go on for 8 years. Not 8 months, not 8 days, 8 years. 8 years that these Palestinians fire rockets from Gaza into the southern Israel before they finally invaded Gaza to put a stop to it. And of course, when they did, the Jew-hating world went berserk, it went ballistic, and condemned Israel for trying to protect itself. Just a few years after Israel pulled out of Gaza, a free election was also held in that area between the supposedly moderate PLO party, which supposedly is willing to make peace with Israel, and the much more radical Hamas party, which publicly vows continually that it will never make peace with Israel. And guess what? The Palestinian people, in a free election, freely elected Hamas, the most radical group on planet Earth, to be their official representatives. The people elected Hamas. Hamas didn't go over and then take over Gaza Strip. The people elected them. That shows what the goal of the Palestinian people is. So this is the game then. Everything the Palestinians do is a strategy. It's a tactic to gain enough territory, to gain enough power, enough weapons to eventually dismantle and destroy Israel and return all that land to Allah. Everything the Jews do is in order to secure real and permanent peace in the region. Israel means what it says when it makes offers and concessions. They have proven that they are willing to give up territory, land, for peace. They've done it. The Palestinians do not make concessions, and even if they did, those concessions would simply be a tactic of war. They do not want peace. And any Palestinian leader stands up and permanently recognizes Israel as a legitimate Jewish state in that area is going to be killed. Now, the constant refusal to permanently recognize Israel has been highlighted in the most recent round of peace talks. On June 14th of last year, the Prime Minister of Israel, Benjamin Netanyahu, gave a speech at Bar Ilan University, and in that speech he did something that no Likud leader had ever done before. He publicly accepted the idea of a Palestinian state between the Jordan River and the Mediterranean. That was never done before. It was always private guarantees, private talks, private assurances, you know, private acknowledgments. No Likud leader, no president ever stood up and said publicly recognized, accepted the idea of a Palestinian state. But Netanyahu laid down two conditions for accepting a Palestinian state. One was that the Palestinian state be demilitarized, so it couldn't be a threat to Israel. And the other was that the Palestinians recognize Israel as the state of the Jewish people. Very simple. Now, Mr. Netanyahu, as we iterated this second condition more than once over the last few months, and in fact, he offered to extend the building freeze, the recent building freeze, he offered to extend that in the West Bank in return for an official Palestinian recognition of Israel as a state of the Jewish people. You see, for many years, the Palestinians have been accusing Israel of not being serious about peace. They've been accusing the Israelis of doing precisely what they are doing, using various strategies and tactics to avoid a peace settlement. So Prime Minister Netanyahu's decision to publicly accept the idea of a Palestinian state, if the Palestinians would publicly recognize Israel as a Jewish state, was a brilliant move because he knows they're not serious about peace. The problem is getting the world to recognize this truth. Asking the Palestinians as the Jewish state, after Netanyahu has done the equivalent for their prospective state, is the epitome of fairness, yet Palestinian Authority President Mohammed Abbas has consistently rejected the offer. Just the other day he said, quote, "We'll never sign a deal demanding recognition of Israel as a Jewish state." Thus, the Palestinian leaders have put themselves in a light that to any fair-minded spectator is not good. Their intentions are becoming very clear, you see. Unfortunately, the nations of this world are not fair-minded when it comes to the Jews or to Israel. Now, so if you want to know what's going on in this present round of peace talks, you have to understand what America's first Muslim president has done. His hatred for Israel and the Jews made him do something very stupid. He wanted to give the Palestinians the upper hand in the peace talks that he was forcing on Israel, at the same time hamstring the Israelis in those talks so that everything came out in favor of the Palestinians. However, what he did instead was to make it impossible for the two sides to sit down and talk, see? Because from the very beginning of his presidency, Hussein Obama has put the total freeze on housing construction in the settlements at the center of his Middle East policy. He has continually and publicly advocated this kind of freeze, even in Jerusalem, even in parts of Jerusalem. And that put both the Palestinians and the Israelis in a bind because it gave both parties very little room to maneuver. President Hussein repeatedly demanded a construction freeze in homes in the West Bank as a condition for renewed peace talks. He thought he was helping the Palestinians, you see. But this kind of public rhetoric made it impossible for the Palestinians to compromise, even if they wanted to, which they don't. I mean, if the President of the United States demanded a complete freeze on all housing as a condition to even start the peace talks, could the Palestinians demand less? This whole debacle encouraged the Palestinians to take a much harder line than they had been, which is already very hard. Now, after Israel agreed to a 10-month building freeze, Abbas used delay tactics for 9 of those months. Wasted 9 of those months in order not to come to the table. And that showed once again that he's not really interested in peace talks. And what did he get for reward? Well, President Hussein Obama rewarded Abbas by publicly demanding an extension of the housing freeze before the 10 months was even up. And the effect of all that was to put Netanyahu in a box with only two choices. One, capitulate to Abbas before the peace talks even started, which would have effectively destroy his coalition government. His coalition government would have fell apart. Or two, have an open confrontation with the United States. So when Netanyahu refused to extend the freeze because he didn't want to lose his government, Abbas walked out of the talks, and he hasn't returned. Now, a Palestinian commentator named Rani Rabi Mustafa had this to say about the situation. It's very interesting. This is a Palestinian talking. Unfortunately, we Palestinians have a fourth-rate statesman at the helm for us, compounded by the fact that a pack of short-sighted Arabs, talking about the Arab League there, short-sighted Arabs are our support. My feeling is that Netanyahu is a frighteningly skilled devil. But devil or not, he never made any public promises of a settlement freeze extension before the direct talks began. That means he never made any promises to extend it beyond the 10 months before the talks. And the Arab League endorsed Abbas to enter the talks under that guise. Now, after the freeze has expired, Abbas is once again crying and about resigning altogether. Naturally, the Arab League has forgotten their original endorsement, as well as their responsibility to the Palestinian people to sit on the chest of Abbas to continue with the direct talks. I think it's ridiculous that we are even sitting at any bargaining table for the simple fact that with regards to Hamas, Abbas can't guarantee any deal he signs on. It's for this reason I was against direct talks until we were unified and could truly guarantee our part of any deal. All that said, we started direct talks and it needs to continue. That's absolutely correct. Netanyahu never said the freeze would extend past 10 months. He initiated the freeze under the great pressure Muslim president, surrounding Arab nations who were supporting the Palestinians and basically leading and guiding them. They gave their blessing for the talks to begin under that situation, under that 10-month freeze. The freeze was supposed to give Abbas and the Israelis some time to hammer out a genuine peace deal. But of course, Abbas not only has no desire to hammer out a deal with the Israelis, he couldn't hammer out a deal even if he wanted to, which he doesn't, because he doesn't have the power to make any such deals stick. He has no power. Any deal that Abbas makes with Israel, short of its own voluntary suicide, will be torpedoed by Hamas, who will never make peace with Israel. Now, the reason Mr. Mustafa can be so honest is because he's an atheist. He's an avowed atheist, though he is proud of his Arab heritage. And since his first allegiance is not to a religion which refuses to tolerate any infidels on Allah's territory, his mind has not been totally warped and closed. As long as he can have his own state, he doesn't mind having a sovereign Jewish state in the Middle East. The problem is, people like Mustafa are a very small minority. For probably 90% of today's Arabs and Muslims, their first loyalty is to Islam and its fanatical intolerance of all things un-Islamic. Now, a few days ago, Egypt's top diplomat and the head of its intelligence branch were in Ramallah in an effort to persuade Abbas to return to the peace talks in exchange for another partial Israeli settlement freeze. And the Egyptian offer was based in part on a recent U.S. initiative in which our Muslim president would apply pressure to Israel to end the occupation and reach a peace agreement within the next years. Meanwhile, in an interview with a reporter from an Italian daily newspaper, the Palestinian Authority Prime Minister Salem Fayyad said the PA was going to declare an independent Palestinian state in 2011. This is what he said, quote, "The deadline is next summer. When the Israeli occupation of the West Bank must end, in 2011 we will celebrate 66 years of the United Nations, and the United Nations will celebrate the birth of our nation." Fayyad said he would give Israel one more year of grace. But these colonies can no longer be there. They are illegal everywhere, here and in Jerusalem. Okay, now this is the reason the Palestinians have been stalling and using every kind of excuse and tactic for the last 30 years in order not to enter direct peace negotiations with the Israelis. A peace agreement between these two parties that has been negotiated by these two parties themselves requires them both to publicly recognize each other on a permanent basis. Okay, on a permanent basis. The Palestinians do not want to do this because they cannot recognize Israel as a permanent Jewish state in that region ever. They can't. So what they've been trying to do for the last 30 years is to get the nations to declare a Palestinian state for them, or at least officially recognize their own proclamation of their own state, without making them recognize Israel as a legitimate, permanent state of the Jews. That's the game. The current plan is to appeal to the United Nations, the International Court of Justice, and the signers of the Geneva Conventions, and unite them all in opposition to Israeli settlements and, quote, occupation. And this will lead to a kind of global assertion of Palestinian statehood that's going to tie Israel's hands. Hanan Ashwari, a former peace negotiator who is part of the inner ruling circle, clique of the PLO. This is what Teresa said. We cannot go on this way. The two-state solution is disappearing. If we cannot stop the settlements through the peace process, we have to go to the Security Council, the Human Rights Council, and every international legal body. Also, in a recent interview, she said that the PLO was holding high-level, quote, high-level discussions on these options. Okay. The officials were against this tactic, this move, because it's a violation of the 1993 Oslo Accords that govern the Israeli-Palestinian relations. Also, it would preempt any efforts by the Israelis to keep certain settlements or negotiate modified borders. The Israelis say what's really going on here is that the Palestinian effort is to secure a state without having to make the difficult decisions on the borders and settlements that negotiations would demand, all right? And that's exactly what's going on. And the Israelis are worried that this kind of strategy is going to work. And they have good reason to worry. No government in the world supports the settlement policy of Israel, and all the nations want to see a Palestinian state erected in the heart of Israel, with East Jerusalem as its capital. So right now, Israel fears that the majority of the nations, including most of those in Europe, is going to back the Palestinians' game plan. That's where we're at right now. Now, at this point, anyone can open their Bible and see how relevant its prophecies are regarding today's political situation, because the Bible tells us very clearly that in the last days, after Israel has returned to its own land, the nations will attack Jerusalem. And why will the nations attack Jerusalem? Well, they're going to attack Jerusalem because they're going to try and force a peace settlement on Israel, which gives the Palestinians a state, their capital, but which will not require the Palestinians Israel as a legitimate Jewish state. Now, the Israelis are tired of war, they're tired of terrorism, they're tired of fighting, and many of them right now are ready to give up East Jerusalem for a true peace with the Palestinians. But they are never going to give up East Jerusalem for an imposed peace by the Jew-hating nations, which is really a sham and is just one more phase in their own destruction. They're not going to put up with that. When that comes, they're going to unite across the political spectrum, and they're going to resist that kind of imposed settlement because it's not a true peace. Now, the Old Testament prophets declare that God's plan for the close of this age regarding Israel and the nations is very clear. They tell us that God is going to regather Israel to their own land and eventually restore them to his favor. They also warn that God's going to intervene in judgment against the nations that oppress Israel and resist his purposes regarding Israel. See, the issue of regathered Israel is the issue that's going to confront all nations at the end of his age. For instance, this is what Joel says. Joel chapter 3, 1 through 2. Says, "For behold, in those days, and at that time, when I shall bring again the captivity of Judah and Jerusalem, I will also gather all nations, and will bring them down into the valley of Jehoshaphat, and will plead with them there for my people the Jews, okay, and for my heritage Israel, whom they have scattered among the nations and parted my land.